Hello, everyone. This is Eric Pennington, and welcome to the Spirit of EQ podcast. We're glad that you've tuned in. A few things we wanted to tell you at the beginning of the show, and that's this podcast was created to be a tool to help you, primarily to discover and grow your EQ. Science and our own lived experiences confirm that the better we are at managing our emotions, the better we're going to be at making decisions, which leads to a better life. And that's something we all want. We're glad that you've taken out the time today to listen and hope that something that you hear will lead to a breakthrough. Hey, one last thing. We'd really appreciate a review on whichever platform you use to listen. And if you want to, leave some comments about what you heard today, as well as follow and subscribe. That way you won't miss a single episode as we continue this journey. And with that, the show begins. Welcome, everyone, to the Spirit of EQ podcast. I'm Eric Pennington. Joining me today on the podcast is Rachel Scott. And Rachel is a senior UX designer with Buckeye Innovation. And for the purposes of this show, which I found most interesting, she is a world traveler. So welcome to the podcast, Rachel.
Thank you.
So with my tongue in cheek with the world traveler thing, I'm going to give our audience a little bit of an idea about why that was such the twist. And that was because one of the sessions that I've done with your company some time ago, somehow you had brought up you had come back from like Tunisia and Libya, which immediately I went, well, time out. What do you mean you came back? Because in my head, I was thinking, well, wait a minute, nobody travels to Libya except for maybe somebody from the CIA or some other clandestine organization. And then you kind of alluded to the fact that you had a goal of like wanting to visit every country on the planet, which I think was like 195 countries or something like that.
Yeah, it depends on which list.
I think exactly. Right. Yeah. So it got me thinking, man, that's fascinating. And all these questions started going through my head. And then, of course, that's when I asked you, hey, would you be interested in being on the podcast? And you were so gracious in saying, yes, you would. So here we are. So, Rachel, I'm going to just jump right into the world traveler thing, right? So I think in terms of travel, as typically we're going on our summer vacation, we're going to Europe, it's our dream 25th anniversary type stuff, all of that. But you're not just that kind of traveler. You really have a desire to do it and do it in a way that I found very fascinating. So can you talk a little bit about maybe think back to your early adventures, right? And maybe what were some of the things you were feeling, right? Some of the emotions before, you know, hopping on the plane, knowing you were going to X, Y, and Z. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, I mean, are we talking about the very beginning of me traveling, or are we talking about like kind of more in recent years?
Well, I'm thinking of it in terms of when you were kind of, I mean, very intentional, like I'm going to go to places that are off the beaten path. And I'm not going just because, hey, it's my brother's wedding and it's in, you know, Brazil or something. So what about those types of adventures?
Well, so after I had traveled the world for a little over a year and seen a lot of places, I kind of, you know, wanted to go a little bit more adventurous, if you will, like off the beaten path, not where everybody goes, places that the US has put on like terrorist watch lists. because I just wanted to, you know, have more adventure and more excitement and like kind of ratchet it up. And also because I think in a lot of cases, the perception of these places is wrong. And so I want to go and see for myself and talk to the people and, you know, see what's really going on there and not what our governments are telling us.
Right. Right. What was that like? Maybe give me an example. What was one of the first countries you went to that was maybe on that quote list?
Afghanistan.
Okay. All right. So our audience, all of us here in the United States anyway, and beyond, we know about Afghanistan. Hopefully we know about it before all of the things that happened after 9/11, but obviously that was not a place that was considered to be, quote, safe, right?
Right. Yeah. So I actually found on Instagram, of all places, a travel group, and it's called Wander Expeditions, and they specialize in taking people to these places. Like, I just didn't roll up there by myself.
Okay. All right. So
there's a small group of us that actually went. But, you know, you have to fly in from Dubai. There's only, you know, a few flights that go into Kabul. So I was definitely nervous, and I was in pretty much full niqab, which is, you know, the hijab and like everything, basically everything, but like my eyes are covered.
Okay.
And so, you know, you're trying to blend in a little bit, but I have really blue eyes, so I have very pale skin, so I don't really blend in that part of the world very much. But so I was a little bit nervous getting to Kabul, but you know, once we were going around, you know, you kind of, there's not a lot of interaction with locals because the Taliban is in charge of everything and they know exactly where you're going all of the time and your name is on a list. But we got to talk to, we had armed guards with us the whole time. And so you get to talk to them a little bit about their experience, especially since last year when the U.S., pulled out, or was it 2 years ago? I don't know. Everything's
about 2 years ago, I think. Yeah.
Oh yeah, it was. It was 2 years ago. Sorry, because I went last year. So you know, just being in that tumultuous time when everything was shifting radically, and they didn't know if they were going to stay in Kabul or if they were going to flee to the U.S. or if they were going to, you know, go to a different part of Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. You know, just talking with them about their experiences, and especially with our guide's wife, and he's got a small daughter, and you know, she's not allowed to go to school now. So that was really interesting.
Wow. So you mentioned you were nervous. So what was some of the kind of the mental conversation in your head as you were dealing with the nerves of it? I mean, because truly understandable, right? But what kind of self or head conversation did you have with yourself about it?
I mean, you know, how safe am I going to be as a woman there? Am I going to stand out too much? Are we going to bring too much attention to ourselves that possibly we could be a target? You know, there's a lot of checkpoints there. So I was thinking, you know, what are those going to be like? How in depth is it going to be? But for the most part, actually, once we got there and got out of the airport, couple, because it's very locked down.
Yeah.
It was actually pretty chill. We weren't supposed to tell anybody like our exact whereabouts while we were there for safety reasons. And when we were in Kabul, actually, ISIS bombed a Sikh temple. I don't mean to laugh, but because it's not funny, but like,
right.
Just like, you know, things are going on there still. Yeah. But I guess my internal dialogue was just, you know, you've been to some of these places before, you know, you're with a group, they're going to take care of you. It's going to be fine. Just, you know, blend in, don't do anything dumb, have like common sense. So,
yeah, well, and I'm obviously that serves you well. So from the perspective of, you mentioned your motivation, wanting to see what it's really like, right? And I too sometimes think, you know, it's like here in the United States, you know, they'll talk about, well, you don't want to go to the south side of Chicago. It's just, you do not want to be there. And I get why, because, but then I go, how much of that is media overblowing something for the purposes of getting eyeballs, right?
Well, there's a lot of ISIS connotations too with like these places and these regions, you know. So I always try to discount all of that.
Yeah, and would you say that helped you a bit?
Yeah, definitely. Because the places that, you know, people always say not to go because there's quote unquote terrorists there are some of the most hospitable people I've ever met in my life.
Wow, that's awesome. That's awesome. So have you always had this adventurous streak in you even before you started?
Yeah. You know, as a little kid, I'm an only child. So I would leave my house and go in search of friends and like fun things to do out in the neighborhood. And my mother would never be able to find where I rode my bike to, because I'd be like three neighborhoods over. So definitely always had an adventurous spirit, and just I don't sit still very often. So I'm constantly going, and also my brain is constantly going, and I'm a very curious person. Yeah. So I get bored easily. So I like, you know, to stimulate my mind and go different places physically and mentally. So yeah, ever since I was a small kid, I was always like out there doing stuff.
Wow. And do you draw any connection to the design side of the equation? Is there a connection there too?
Yeah, definitely. I think that, you know, being exposed to different cultures, different ways of life, different ways of thinking, it definitely impacts, you know, what I design, how I design, how I think about design, how I think about processes in my job. So yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So that makes me think of another thing about, you know, kind of the idea of, well, why wouldn't we want to learn from different people with different views and different thoughts? And as you know, living in the United States, sometimes as advanced as we are some of the most narrow of people when it comes to that, right? Was that eye-opening when you got to see other places where the view was different than the American, typical American lens?
Yeah, I mean, so I've been traveling internationally since I was 14. I was lucky enough to go on a couple of school trips when I was younger. I mean, it was Western Europe, which is still, you know, the West. There's a lot of similarities to here. But, you know, just being exposed to that young age to like, you know, different culture, even if it's just, you know, slightly different. Yeah, it was very eye opening. You know, I went to Germany, I went to Dachau, where one of the concentration camps was. That was a very moving and eye-opening experience that, you know, changed my perception of things at my young 14 years. So, yeah, I definitely think, you know, from an early age, I was kind of transformed. And it just, so I got to visit Dachau in Germany, which was one of the concentration camps, and it was very eye-opening, you know, being 14 years old and going to see something like that, and just you can feel the energy there, and it is very, very powerful. And so, yeah, it was, you know, just a totally different experience from anything, you know, in the U.S. that we have. You know, you can't draw very, very many comparisons there. So it's, you know, that was one of the most poignant moments of my early travel career that kind of changed and shaped me.
Yeah. So at 14, you get this experience, and can you recall what were some of the things you were feeling when you got there to Dachau?
Oh, it was just the minute you stepped over the threshold, it was immense, just sorrow and pain. And I mean, I was just bawling, and like everybody I was with was like super upset. And I mean, it was just like a heavy, like cloud just came over you. Like I could feel a physical almost, you know, like the air felt different.
Yeah.
It was really intense. It was really intense.
Wow. So, though that was early and you were in Western Europe, right? So there is some frame. What was your first, how would I say it? What was the first time going out to, somewhere maybe either Middle Eastern or Asian, somewhere outside of the Western world? What was that first trip?
So in 2015, I got divorced. And so I ended up going on this year-long trip, if you will, that was basically you work remote for an entire year. And we went to 12 different countries in 12 months. And so we started out in, it was this company called Remote Year that does it. So we started out in South America, and then we went to, Eastern Europe, and then we went to Southeast Asia. And so it was my first time in, well, it wasn't my first time in Southeast Asia. I'd been to Thailand once before, but, we lived in, Cambodia, Thailand, Malaysia, and Vietnam. Mm-hmm. And I just fell in love with all of those countries. Malaysia was amazing. And Vietnam, the food is spectacular in Vietnam. Really all like Asian food I love. Southeast Asia.
Right.
And the spicier, the better. But yeah, definitely. I mean, it wasn't so much of like a culture shock, cause, you know, I'm in my, you know, mid 30s at this point. So I've been around the block a few times, but, you know, just seeing how people don't live, in this, with this mindset of like hyper like individualism. Everybody's like a community, you know, people live with generations of their family under the same roof. They do everything, you know, what's better for kind of like the collective, you know, community or the collective, like, you know, neighborhood, or like what's going to be good for a lot of people, like versus, you know, where we live in a society that's very individualistic.
Yeah. And I know that one is we could probably do a podcast on that one, right? The difference between the two and the results accordingly, right? So would you say that that trip in 2015 or that year long adventure you were on, did that really kind of shape how you viewed the difference between sort of a westernized mindset versus an other part of the world mindset?
Absolutely. I mean, that whole year changed my entire life. It changed the course of everything that I'm doing. I became much more intentional as a person. So yeah, it definitely brought out the stark differences in our society and things that I value and things that I don't value. And they clash. Like, I don't value a lot of Western values, and I don't view success the same as Western success.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting, isn't it? That the very thing that could broaden your horizon is the thing that we shy away from. Right. And I've always personally felt that, you know, America found itself in this kind of dualistic approach to life, right? Where it's either you win or you lose, good or it's bad. And there's no nuance, right? And just because you look at nuance does not mean you have to give up all of your foundational principles, right? It just means, why don't you listen to someone else who gets up in a different way and has to approach things in a different manner, right? What I have found, Rachel, is that typically people would just like to be heard.
Yeah.
You know? And just listen, you know, don't you, and I think we kind of, in America anyway, we skewed it so far to the, we've got to be right. We're going to win. You know, it's almost like you would think life was a bloody football game or something. What by far, if you can say it this way, right, was the most dangerous place you visited? Meaning your experience, not so much by what reputation. And even if that's a felt thing, I mean, it may not, I'm not asking you to say, hey, were you ever at gunpoint and thought that they were going to throw you in a blah, 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 but just something where, hey, I feel like this is a little dangerous.
I don't know how dangerous per se, but, a group of us did get stranded on the island of Socotra, which is technically part of Yemen, but it's controlled right now by United Arab Emirates, and only have like one flight out a week, and they stranded 60 tourists because of a cyclone, but it wasn't a cyclone. It was because there was disputes. They want to turn it into a port. And so there's all these, you know, there's this battle, you know, politically and with different countries about like, you know, whose territory it is and what they're going to do with it. And so they didn't want tourists flying in there. And so for about 4 days, we didn't know what was going to happen. And the island doesn't have very good connectivity, or at least it didn't a couple years ago. And so there was very limited Wi-Fi. There was only two hotels. And I say that, you know, hotels, right. On the island. It was like, we were camping, you're totally off the grid out there. And so that was a little bit harrowing because we just didn't know what was going to happen. And you're at the whim of like governments. And yeah. The only thing we actually got off the island was there was a diplomat there, and they made some phone calls and got us a plane.
Wow, that's kind of in my head. I'm thinking of like some. Did you ever see the movie The Year of Living Dangerously?
No.
It's worth you taking a peek at. It has not elements to your situation, but it's set in Southeast Asia. It's an older movie, but anyway, for the audience, if you are aware of that movie, it's a really good movie, and it kind of got me thinking. But I digress. So in those situations, I'm going to kind of come back a little bit to how it's informed in the work that you do. Obviously, I would think with design, having different perspectives has a potential of helping you be a better designer. And I think you said, yeah, that has.
Yeah, I mean, definitely, you know, I'm, you know, always curious, which, you know, drives creativity because you're always, you know, looking for cool new ways of, you know, solving problems.
Right.
And, you know, just, yeah, all the different perspectives, you know, that I've gained from just traveling around, I think helps me solve problems for different clients for sure. And, you know, come to the table with like, you know, out of the box solutions.
Really. Yeah, because quite frankly, you potentially have seen it, I mean, in some fashion or form, right? Anything that comes to mind of an experience you had in your travels that influenced you in your design work?
I don't know about something totally specific, but I think another point is really, I like to be constantly out of my comfort zone. Like on purpose. And so, you know, whether that be in, you know, a setting with a new client or trying to think of a solution to a complex problem, you know, that I'm, you know, working on with, say, like a web app or, you know, somebody's website refresh or, you know, any kind of project, being out of my comfort zone is kind of the norm. And so I don't shy away from things being difficult or, you know, hard or not kind of, you know, maybe understanding what something is right off the bat, because I'm willing to dive in and, you know, really get down to the bottom of it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm going to touch on that a bit in a minute or so, because it does speak to something that I've really been thinking a lot about, at least in 2023. And that's about our willingness to push ourselves beyond comfort, to do hard things. Right. And there is research out there that says that's a good way to keep your brain healthy, especially as you go into the latter part of the years of your life, right? And it's kind of funny because my wife and I have been talking with financial planners as of late, right? And the inevitable question is, so when do you think you're going to want to retire? How much, you know? And I stop them immediately and I say, retirement is a myth. I'll stop working when I die. Now,
said the exact same thing, actually.
Okay. All right. So then you may be able to relate to the response that I get when I say that, because it's typically eyes get wide and it's kind of like the cocking of the head, you know. I mean, imagine the dog that hears something and it's kind of like, what is that? What are you saying? And I say that not to say that I may not necessarily want to do everything that I'm doing now 30 years from now, if I'm so fortunate to live that long. But it's this idea that you never want to stop, because to me, stopping is the equivalent of knocking on the door to say I'm done, as in the end of my days. So this idea of doing hard things, but I want to go back into the design side once more, because, you know, I may be stereotyping the atypical small mid-size business, and that they may not necessarily be able to understand someone who's had so much experience, right? And I don't mean just in the fact that you were certified and you went to school for design and all that. I'm talking about experience with other cultures and others and dangerous situations. Now, for me, that's thrilling. That's like, oh my gosh, I would want that involved in a project, because it just seems like it's rich. Are you, how I say this so that you don't give away any state secrets. How's the response been from organizations, from that, having that perspective that you have?
Well, so I freelance for a lot of years. I still do freelance on the side. And so I have a lot of international people that I work with. And so they're really cool with it. I think it makes me more of an asset. It makes me, more attractive as one of their contractors, because, I've worked with a lot of people from around the world. And so it's kind of like a seamless transition from traveling to, you know, that professional capacity. As far as a lot of people stateside, and even I used to work with a Canadian company. Mm-hmm. They just found it like really fascinating, and everybody always wants to hear all the stories. Right. Because they some of them maybe haven't been outside, you know, of their region before even. So right. They... it's a totally different perspective for them.
Yeah. So that kind of, and correct me if I'm wrong here, with having so many diverse clients from different regions of the world, I would imagine they got to a place where they knew you well enough that they could value the perspectives that you'd bring. So it'd be like, hey, let's call Rachel because we know X, Y, and Z. So it's not like you're only locked into working in one silo. Would you describe it that way?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's nice to have contacts all around the world, because when somebody needs something, they're like, oh, hey, why don't you call Rachel? And it's been an awesome networking tool as well.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? It's interesting. Something that involves the living of a life is also producing fruit in the work side of that equation. I do believe sometimes, Rachel, we get so, and again, maybe this is the United States, a Western mindset, but I think we get so laser focused on what's the job, what's the benefits, what's the pay, what are my, when can I be promoted? And we forget that, well, maybe that should go after the life thing. Like, what kind of life do I want to live? And maybe by doing that, I increase the chances that I get this other stuff.
Yeah, you know what I mean? I do. So money has never been a motivator to me. I know what I'm worth, given my experience. But for me, really, working at Buckeye specifically aligns with my goals in life, and what kind of work I want to be doing, and what kind of clients I want to be serving. I want to be serving people in the community. I want to be serving people that, has their voices may not be heard, just generally like underserved people, or people that don't have, a lot of tech experience in their corner. So it really aligns with my life goals. And that's way more important to me than a promotion or a raise or, you know, all of these other like kind of climbing up the corporate ladder things. I mean, I've worked in corporate America. I worked in corporate America for quite a few years and it was soulless. And I absolutely hated it. And I made a lot of money at that time, you know, 20 years ago, and was successful, quote unquote, but I hated getting up every morning to go into the office. And so this is like so much better.
Yeah. Yeah. And as I know, you know, this about me, you know, if someone chooses, and I my gut says you're going to agree with me here, not because I need you to agree with me, but if someone chooses, they want to work for a Fortune 500 company and spend 30 years there, do whatever. Hey, that's cool. You do you, right? However, I think you're not the first person I've heard about the soul suck. I think there's so much opportunity for any size company to create an environment where that's not happening because it's not healthy, right? And, you know, here's the deal. Those organizations may say, well, Eric, we are who we are. And if you don't like it, well, I get it, because then, you know, Rachel, you, me, or whoever else, you can say, I'm going to decide to go in a different direction. I mean, it's not something that you're forced to do. But I do believe if we work on having a great life, that sets us up to have a better career, you know? So when we think about the hard things, you mentioned about you've always been this, hey, I'm curious, I'm going to move myself outside of the comfort zone. You even said it, at least what I heard, it's intentional. It's like, it's not just by chance, right? So if you could trace it to anything, what maybe was a catalyst for you to have that point of view? And I know you alluded to, you know, some of the things when you were growing up and all of those things. Is there anything that you would point to that's been maybe a catalyst for you to like be on purpose about moving outside of your comfort zone?
Yeah, definitely. So like I referenced before, so in 2015, I got divorced, pretty much ended up with nothing. And so I was just trying to figure out what is my next, you know, move in life. What am I doing? You know, and I'd kind of lost myself for a while. And so I had to really figure out, you know, what brings me joy? What am I passionate about? Who am I to my core? You know, let's get back to the roots, you know, what drives me. And so, you know, travel just happened to pop up on my radar because I was manifesting it. So it came into my universe and instantly I felt alive again. I felt passionate. I felt like I was, you know, moving in the right direction. Even though, you know, I'd kind of been at rock bottom. And so that really brought me back to center and it started this movement towards, yeah, just like living more intentionally, you know, being passionate about travel, being passionate about like new experiences and meeting new people and understanding, you know, cultures that are completely different from my own and kind of like being more like one with, you know, everybody in the, you know, on the planet because we're all connected.
Yeah. So, do you feel like it's somewhat of a case? So that I don't pigeonhole you to say that you, I know when I came to my quote existential crisis, I was at a certain age. And I know what I felt was, hey, if I'm not careful, I may burn the rest of the time I have in front of me. And I didn't want to do that. I wanted to make what I would do next matter. Did you feel any of that when you hit that crossroads or no?
Well, I was a little bit younger. Like, so that happened when I was 33.
Okay.
So I felt, you know, I'd done a lot of living in my 20s. I felt like I had kind of flipped because I was very responsible in my 20s. I was, I been married twice. So, and I had like a corporate job, I had a house, I had like all of these things.
Right, right.
And then I totally flipped it over. And so in my, like all of my 30s, I sold everything I owned. I was traveling the world. I was, you know, unattached, you know, just living my life and figuring things out. So I kind of feel like I did things backwards.
Yeah. Well, you know, here's the thing, right? Regardless of your age and how you did it and whatever, when you get to the, my wife and I have this kind of inside thing where we go, it's your Rubicon, right? And for our audience, if you're not familiar with that, that Rubicon describes a river in Italy where Julius Caesar, he came upon that river before he was going to Rome, and he knew that if he crossed the Rubicon, there was no turning back, right? And there's all kinds of these stories I know that can point to the idea of like crossroads, burn the ships in the harbor, whatever you want to use. But those I think are powerful for us, right? And I would throw out, if you're in that place, you should stop and reflect about where you're at. Because my great concern, Rachel, is people who they do stop, but they decide to do nothing. They decide to just stay where they're at, stay in that job, and just sort of grind their way and just hope that things will fix themselves, if I can say it that way. And again, this is not me judging. If that's truly what you want to do with your life, it's your life. But I think there's something to be said about, hey, wait a minute. You mentioned like finding that center again, right? If you find you're off center, why don't you do something to move you to center, right? Okay, so the hard things. So let me set this up for you, and then we can dig a little deeper into it. Hardest trip, hardest travel that you can remember? And I'll let you describe and associate whichever way you want, but what's been the most difficult travel?
So I think the very first country that I went to on that year-long journey with Remote Year, I flew down to Montevideo, Uruguay, and, you know, showed up alone, was going to meet up with some of the people from the group later on. But it had been quite a while since I had done any international travel. I was still kind of, you know, emotionally broken, from all the events of, you know, the previous year. Yeah. And so I didn't have the confidence and I was really nervous. My Spanish is not great. Still, even it's not great, which it should be better, but, so, you know, and then I rolled up and my cell phone, my SIM card wasn't working. I couldn't get Wi-Fi. I was trying to get a hold of somebody because the Airbnb that I'd booked, the guy totally flaked on me. I think it was like a scam. So I was just with my bags wandering the streets of Montevideo, looking for help. But, you know, so I think that was really, it was really hard because I wasn't very self-assured. Now, I can touch down in virtually any place on the planet by myself and I'm good to go because I'm super confident and not a lot of things freak me out anymore.
Well, there's something that to be said about that I think is so powerful, right? I mean, and I get the apprehension and the fear. I mean, when you were describing landing in Uruguay in that city, I'm thinking of myself if I was there, right? Like, oh my gosh, you know, as soon as I can get a flight out of here, I'm going back, right? Whatever, right? But I think, and this is the sort of the mystery and the myth that can come into doing hard things is that we have a story in our head about something and we latch onto it really tightly, not realizing that maybe if we are a little more curious, we could discover that, yeah, you can do that. You did survive that. You do know how to navigate yourself when you're in a place that's totally foreign to you. And audience, I understand. I mean, this is not me saying, hey, we need to do what Rachel does. But I think there is something to be said about that. How does that apply in just everyday life for you as far as doing something that's hard?
I mean, I guess I just don't think of it in terms like that. I mean, it's a challenge, but I feel like I'm a very capable person. And so I can figure out the challenge and, you know, overcome it or, you know, find a solution or, you know, what have you.
Yeah. And do you think you could have come to that kind of conclusion without the experiences?
I think the trajectory that my life was on, absolutely not. No. So I am really grateful for the way things turned out because I am my authentic self and I have like so much more confidence now than I've had in, you know, previous decades of my life. And I owe everything to, you know, all of the events that transpired to get me back on the path of, you know, my passions and really understanding who I am at the core.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. That's awesome. Cause we have a desire in the work that we do at Spirit of EQ for this, but it's my longing for human beings in general is, and quite frankly, I think that's the danger of our society in the United States. We have so much prosperity and we have so much, you know, speaking of AI, I can say it that way, right? I think some people are getting to a place where maybe they feel like, well, why do I need to do hard things? I mean, I can just type in or I can ask and there I have it. And I think of it in terms of, well, the reality is not if hard things, it's when hard things, right? And I don't know about you, Rachel. Well, I'm going to guess that you probably would be in my tribe on this one. I know that when hard times come, I want to be as prepared as I can be. I want to be like you're in that situation of like, I wasn't expecting to land in fill in the blank. But you know what? Typically airports are always situated this way. Oh, you know what I need to do? I don't need this. I can just ask this. Oh, you don't want to look them in the eye because you look them in the eye. That's a tip off. That doesn't mean you're going to get out of there safely. It doesn't mean that everything will just go easy, but that's a heck of a lot better than, well, I don't know what to do and I'm a freak. I'm going to panic. I'm going to run. I'm going to hide, all of that. You know what I mean?
I do. Well, and you know, even if it's not hard, quote unquote, change is a constant in our lives. And, you know, you can either embrace it and, you know, try to understand how to go with the flow, or, you know, maybe it's there to, you know, change your perspective or, you know, get you out of that comfort zone or, you know, what have you, but you can't fight against change.
Ooh, that's a good one. That's a good one. It's very interesting to me, like when you're saying that, because we all are used to it. I mean, if you think about it, I mean, where I live, temperatures over the weekend were in the 40s. Today, the high was 25 and windy. I mean, it was dramatically different, right? But you know what? We put on a different coat. We put on a sweater. I get to thinking about that and I go, all right, well, easy to talk about the weather. But one of my favorite analogies is this idea of like, why is it that we love like movies with a very interesting plot, with a very either it's mystery or suspenseful? Because it's interesting, right?
It's dramatic. People like drama.
Right?
Yeah.
But then if you say, well, how about that in your life? Then we recoil. We then say, oh, no. I want certainty. I want safety. I want security. And it's like, well, wait a minute. If I showed you a movie that had safety, security, and stability, you'd never go see it. Or you'd walk out because it would be boring, you know?
I mean, those things are illusions.
Yeah. That's an interesting perspective, illusions. So would you say that in some senses, maybe it's us buying into an illusion?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, our whole societal structure here, I feel like is an illusion that we're all buying into in various capacities.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that kind of speaks to, I know for me, why I do this work is that I want to be a part of maybe that bell that rings that makes, doesn't make somebody, but maybe inspires them to kind of go, wait a minute, I heard that bell. Wait a minute. And maybe I'm being very overly matrix oriented when I say that, but yeah, it's interesting, Rachel. So what's your next objective? I mean, I didn't ask you in the beginning, how many countries have you been to? And then maybe what's up next for you as far as your world travels?
Well, I've been to 66 so far.
Okay.
What's up next? I'm going to a wedding in South Africa. I leave tomorrow. Yep. I've already been to South Africa, but I'm excited to go again. Yeah. But as far as like up next, I mean, I don't travel as extensively as I used to for a lot of reasons.
Yep.
But I try to go, you know, on a few cool trips a year. My birthday is in late August. So last year I did a solo trip to Iceland. I rented a camper van and went all around the island, which was amazing. It was for my 40th birthday party or 40th birthday. So I had to do something like really awesome. So I was like, solo trip to Iceland. So next year I'm turning 42. So I'm going to go to Papua New Guinea, and hang out with the tribes.
Wow. And, I probably should know this geography wise, but where does New Guinea sit?
It's in Oceania. So it's up above, Australia, and it's over by, Indonesia and the Philippines.
Okay. Okay. All right. That was going to be my guess, but, I couldn't locate it in my head. Well, Rachel, I can't thank you enough for coming on the show. I've really enjoyed it. And I knew as soon as when we were talking in that session, I'm going, this would be something to explore. So I really do appreciate it. And we'll have you back because there's a couple of things I did not get to today that I'm wanted to ask you about. So if you have that desire and interest, but thank you so much.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Everyone, we appreciate you tuning into the show today, and we look forward to the next time that we're together. Take care.
Hi, everyone. This is Eric again. A couple of things as we've ended the show. We hope you enjoyed it. Hopefully, you're tuning in on a regular basis. We'd love it if you would give us a great review on whatever platform you're listening to the podcast. It's so appreciative and helps us as we try to get more exposure for the work we do and the episodes that we publish. And we're grateful to you as a listener. The second thing is, just remember, our content is for educational purposes only. It's not intended by any stretch to diagnose or to treat anything that may be occurring in your life or anyone else's life that you may be connected to through the podcast. But once again, we appreciate you tuning in to the shows. And as always, we look forward to the next time that we're together. Take care.